This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham.
Most of us would like to feel we've done some good in the world, but how about this? You buy a plane ticket to one of the most impoverished places imaginable. You join with a group of like-minded others and start constructing a medical clinic, a civic building, a community center. And soon, you have built something that will be of enormous benefit to many, many people in need. Over the past decade and a half, hundreds of Americans have participated in just such a journey. And upon their return, every single one of them said they felt they received more than they gave. This is the story of the Virginia-based group Building Goodness. And it is the story we will pursue in detail right after the news. Great to be with you. I'm Tom Graham, and this is Virginia Insight. The group that calls itself the Building Goodness Foundation is our focus. With me here in the Insight studio, a man who volunteered on Building Goodness projects for some 10 years and then became the foundation's full-time executive director, Kelly Epley. A woman who worked as a newspaper reporter and editor for 3 decades, but who says after her first time on a Building Goodness volunteer mission, she was at such a loss for words, it was more than a year before she could write down anything about what she'd experienced. Mary Alice Blackwell, plus by phone, a construction consultant from Charlottesville who says he was so moved by his first Building Goodness experience in Haiti, he's gone back to that country 10 times over the past 3 years to continue working on projects there. Joe Simpson, thank you all three for making time for us.
Thank you, Tom. We're glad to be here.
Very happy to be here.
Well, Mary Alice, you're the professional wordsmith, and eventually you were able to write about your first experience with this organization. So let me turn to you first. What is Building Goodness, and what have you experienced as a volunteer with this group?
Well, to me, Building Goodness Foundation is exactly what the words say. It's a group of, it started out, I guess, with three guys who decided to go out into Haiti and to help an impoverished country. Now they build homes, they build clinics, they build whatever is in need with partners. And occasionally, lucky people like me who have no carpentry skills gets to tag along. And for me, I come back with so much more than I feel like that I've left behind.
There is the Building Goodness started and still has its base of operations out of Charlottesville, Virginia. And there's a story about you being a newspaper reporter and editor in Charlottesville a few years ago and that leading to your first experience with this organization. Tell us some about that story.
I was an editor and someone, I think it was Connie Jorgensen, had called me and said, we'd like you to do a story. I met with her and I was an editor, so I said, well, you know, this is a nice little group. I'll assign it to someone else to write. David Maurer wrote the story. I was so taken by the story that I met with Connie again, and she says, well, you really should go on a trip to Haiti. And I says, well, David wrote about this trip where you go out and you camp and you have no electricity, you have no running water, you have no bathroom, and you're out there for a week living with the Haitians, building a home. I said, that's the one I want to go on. And so me, who is afraid of flying and afraid of going anywhere without, you know, support system, got on a plane with people that I didn't even know and went and had a great time. And it was actually so moved. I didn't go as a reporter. I went as a person. But I knew that I wanted to write about it. And I came back, and the most natural thing for me in the world for 30 years had been to write a story. I couldn't find the words to write the story.
This was your first time, was 2009?
Yes, February, I think, 2009.
Take us back then, if you can remember all these years back. You're getting off the plane. This is your first time ever in Haiti or any place like Haiti.
Right.
What did you see? What did you experience? What kinds of...
This was before the earthquake. And we had been told that there was a lot of violence and, you know, not violence, but yeah, it was a poor country. And the people in the cities had to resort to getting money any way they could. So we were told, there were three girls, they were told to hold on to each other's jackets, you know, when you walk through the airports. So I was very nervous. I got off the plane, so relieved to be alive after getting off a plane because it scared me to death. But, you know, you were just overwhelmed. It was a big city, and I was overwhelmed. But there was this one-armed man named Jackson who pulled up, and he scurried us through the crowd, put us on the little van, and were driving us through streets like I have never seen. There were no dividing lines in the streets. You just had four cars abreast going in one direction, three cars coming straight at you in the other directions, and they did it very well. They knew how to maneuver and not run into each other. And it was just, I was in awe of the people, of the place.
How obvious was it that you were in a completely different place than you had left? How obvious was it that this was indeed an impoverished nation?
Oh, you could tell when you got off the plane, the smell was different. I think, what is it? Is it there's so much, is it charcoal, Kelly?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, all their fuel is charcoal, and you can see little, I guess they dig holes and put wood and set it on fire, and that's how they made their charcoal. So you could see these little puffs of smoke coming up from the ground everywhere, and it was just an overwhelming smell. It was different, and it was hot, and it was crowded, and the streets were filled with litter. I mean, there were mountains of plastic, you know, water bottles, and it was overwhelming to me. But then you'd be driving along and you'd see these little children out there, and they'd have these big smiles on their faces, and they would wave to you. So I was intrigued. I was captured by the people right away. And
Joe Simpson, it seems to me that I've heard you say in the past, Joe, that one of the things, and I think your first time in Haiti with Building Goodness as a volunteer was also in 2009?
No, it was in 2010,
okay.
Just a few months after the earthquake.
But do I recall hearing you say in the past, Joe, that you were struck with the sense of joy that emanated from so many of these people with the smiling and seeming happy despite all the poverty around them?
Yes, completely.
Tell us more about that.
So I think that's one of the things that everyone that goes on a trip to Haiti, whether it's with Building Goodness Foundation or another group, that's what they come away with. You see people just living, you know, at the bare minimum. You know, they have one meal a day, if they're lucky. You know, the tattered pair of shoes that they wear down the street, but just completely full of hope and optimism and eager to work hard and eager to learn, very inquisitive, trying to learn new trades, trying to better themselves and better their lives for their families. And it's just contagious when you show up there. You know, it starts from the little kids all the way up to the great-grandparents that are walking all over the country. And it's something that you kind of take for granted, just the compassion and the charisma that people have. You don't see that here in everyday life when people are caught up with the busyness of their schedule and their work. So it's very refreshing to see that.
Kelly Epley?
Yes.
10 years as a volunteer before you took on your current job a few years ago as executive director of this organization.
Mm-hmm.
What do you want people to know about Building Goodness?
I want them to hear what people experience when they go to another place. When they are out of their comfort zone, they know they have some skill, something to offer, when they really want to help, and all of a sudden they realize, you know, I'm not in control of this. I need to be a part of something that is helping. And so they rely on their comrades, they rely on their friends, they rely on the local people to join together. I want people to know about Building Goodness. Is that what we do? That's what we do. We go in. Our objective is to improve a building, to build a community building. Our larger objective is to build community. And that means the human interaction piece of the no matter if you're a skilled builder with, you know, 50 years of experience behind you, or someone who is not so good with a hammer, you can connect with other people and you can give skill and value at some point in our projects. And so that's what I want people to know, is that we do build significant buildings, well-designed, very safe. And we build community because we connect with other nonprofit or NGO groups on the ground that are making a big difference. And we organize that well. Now, that I think probably one of the bigger issues when it comes to media and different articles and things that are being said about Haiti right now really often miss what I think we're talking about here. Joe, Mary Alice are talking about how they connected with the Haitian people. Very few nonprofits, I think, out there or NGOs out there are experiencing, apparently from what we're hearing, the same sort of success we're enjoying, because there are several ingredients that are happening that I think are important to highlight. We're connected with an NGO on the ground that is respected, has sustainability, very connected in a community. And then we got a project that's really going to improve people's lives. So you got community investment. They're invested to help build the building. And then we put volunteers side by side with those people who want to improve their lives. And that is something very difficult and hard to organize from the macro level, from policy level, from billions of dollars worth of contributions. It has to be organized from the grassroots level. And so because we're a small, somewhat flexible and versatile group operating out of Charlottesville, Virginia, we've been able to operate like that in three communities and make significant progress.
Kelly Epley, even though you've been working with this organization for close to 15 years, first for all those years as a volunteer and now as a staffer, you were not there at the very beginning. And Mary Alice hinted a little bit at how this got started in Charlottesville back, I think it was in 1997. But tell us a little bit more about that story, about those three guys.
Those three guys?
Howard Pape.
Mike Cernick and Jack Stoner. They are three people who are really good friends. Two of them worked together, Alexander Nicholson. Howard Pape
works. They were all somehow involved in architecture or construction?
They're all construction guys. Central Virginia Waterproofing is Howard Pape's business. Alexander Nicholson is a construction firm that builds residential in Charlottesville, and very nice homes. But they all three talk about a shared sense of lacking purpose. And Jack Stoner was part of a building trip to Haiti and realized that what was missing was skilled people to help build a rather more elaborate roof on
it. Yeah, the first time he went, sometime in the mid to late 90s, was with a church group. He came back and started talking to his friends in the construction business and said, "You wouldn't believe how wonderful you feel after you do this.
Right.
Come with me and do this."
He says that he was looking for the place that he fit in as a person on the planet. And then after that, he realized that he was more happy completely when he was helping people connect in Haiti and helping volunteers be with Haitians and have a positive experience that way. And then he came back and he started recruiting his friends, and he started paying for a number of his employees to go down. They came back having a transformational experience. Friends get friends involved, and we've been growing organically ever since.
Well, I want to ask you more about that transformational experience that so many people talk about once they get involved with this organization. But we're going to hit the break here in a moment. So I want to say to you who are listening, if someone invited you to buy a plane ticket to a part of the world that was completely foreign to you, but a place that you knew was desperately in need of help, including your help, how would you react to that invitation? Are you hearing anything about the Building Goodness Foundation that strikes a chord for you? How would you approach doing volunteer work for such an organization? What questions would you want answered? Or would you just get on the plane and go? We've got a phone line open for you at 888-WMRA-TALK. That's 888-967-2825. This conversation with members of the Building Goodness Foundation group is going to continue in just a bit more than 1 minute. Here here in the Insight Studio, Executive Director of the Building Goodness Foundation, Kelly Epley, and Building Goodness Volunteer, Mary Alice Blackwell. Plus, with us on a cell phone line from Charlottesville, another Building Goodness Volunteer, Joe Simpson. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. And Joe, I know that you've got another assignment. You've only got a couple more minutes you can spend with us. So before you go, tell us what you want people to know about what you've experienced. Mm-hmm. I mean, in some ways, 13, 14 years after this organization started, you were kind of a repeat of the early experience of construction guys who found out that there was a need and decided to try to meet it.
Yeah, exactly. For me, I got involved in Building Goodness because I'm in the construction industry, and I work closely with other folks that have gone down to Haiti before in the construction industry. So after having gone down there and working as a volunteer project manager, gone down a few times working as a volunteer project manager, I realized that it's not about the building that we build there, but it's about the transformational experience that we have as volunteers that makes us want to come back and help. And probably my favorite trip ever was with a group of non-builders, and we went down there together. And that's the experience you have at the end of the day when, or at the end of the week, when you've accomplished something very good and something very meaningful that's really going to impact the lives of a lot of people. And you don't necessarily have to be an expert in construction. You don't have to really have any strong skill sets. You just have to have a desire to want to help. And so, having come away with it from that perspective, that's the one thing I really wanted to convince convince people out there that although it is a builder oriented type of organization, going down there and just volunteering yourself to give what skills you can have is a big help. And we change the community every time we do a trip down there.
The man who often serves as a volunteer construction site manager for Building Goodness projects, specifically in Haiti, professional construction consultant from Charlottesville, Joe Simpson. Joe, thank you so very much for making time for us. Do I understand that you have been to Haiti 10 times in the past 3 years, and soon you will be making your 11th trip there as a volunteer?
Yeah, I think that's about right. Starting to lose track of it now, but yeah, I've been down there several times. And it keeps getting better, actually, every time I go down.
Best of luck to you. Thank you for making time for us.
Thanks a lot.
We still have with us the Executive Director of the Building Goodness Foundation, Kelly Epley, as well as Building Goodness Volunteer, Mary Alice Blackwell. If you want to talk to either of them, we've got the phone line open at 888-WMRA-TALK. Haiti is where this started, Kelly Epley, but it has expanded significantly. Although Haiti is still where much work is needed, especially since the earthquake there, what are some of the other places that you've been working or that you will be working?
We had become very Haiti-centric since the earthquake. After that earthquake, we had pre-existing relationships there for 10 years before the earthquake, and so we decided to jump in and help our partners specifically, two NGOs that were very important. But after
this
we started,
it was back in 2010.
That's right, 2010. So we've been very busy in this decade in Haiti. But we're once again expanding back out to Central American countries where we were working in the last decade. We had significant work in Honduras, helping a community put in a water system. Work in Guatemala, we helped build a school up in the mountains of Ixtatán. We've been working lately as well in Nicaragua, with another group called Bridges to Community. We've been helping rehabilitate a very poorly maintained hospital in the north in Ciuna. So we've been in El Salvador. We have currently a project in El Salvador. We've been working with the Nursing Students Without Borders at UVA and the Red Cross in El Salvador to construct a clinic in San Sebastian. So we've been in these four countries somewhat recently.
And I understand that you've also been advising or have advised a project of some sort in Africa. So was it Uganda?
We have in Uganda. We sent a couple of people to help scout out and do some advisory on a hospital that was being built with another organization there.
And here in the U.S., you regularly do some renovation work in the greater Charlottesville area for people in need. But the one major experience, do I understand, was after Katrina in Mississippi.
Right. We did. We jumped in completely into the community of Purlington and helped build shelters to help people with storage of items.
That was
Katrina.
A little town in Mississippi that was pretty much destroyed by the hurricane.
That's right, completely wiped out in an area they had no flood insurance, way off the map. Many other places were receiving care. A group from Charlottesville helped connect us with that. And we built the shelters, and then that's where we learned that what we really like to do is community buildings that are enduring, long-lasting. Other organizations can do relief. We know that we can do reconstruction and do it well. And so we, with VMDO Architects in Charlottesville and a number of builders, Jack Horn from Martin Horn Construction was the project manager, jumped in. We had, 140 volunteers went down to Pearland? No, goodness, 300. Some plus volunteers went down to Purling to be part of that large project. But, you know, I'm glad you bring this up because people are always asking us, what do you do locally? Why are you so involved around the world? Aren't there needs close to home? But we're busy 40 weekends a year in our county. We help do home renovations there through a project in April, and we help work other NGOs in the Charlottesville area. So more volunteers work with us locally.
And these are primarily for people who don't have the finances to build a much-needed handicap.
Right, exactly.
Or
low-income homeowners who need renovations. We're not Habitat. We don't build new homes. We collaborate with Habitat. We just built a playground with Habitat. But we work with low-income homeowners who are running risk of losing their family-owned home. May have been in that home for 100 years, but for whatever reason, often mostly medical reasons, they're about to lose the home, and we go in and help renovate it and bring it to a whole new state. In one weekend in April, we have what I call 10 extreme homeowner makeovers or home makeovers where we go in and make a house substantial again for a family.
So. Kelly Epley, Executive Director of the Building Goodness Foundation. Tell me about this phrase we hear so often from people who have volunteered on some project. Transformational experience?
And that's a very convoluted term, but and that is so subjective. But what we know to be true about our experience is that when people get outside their comfort zone and they see the world from a different perspective, they come back a different person. They see their worlds differently. They see the way they go to work differently. They see their relationships differently. They feel like a transformed being simply because they've removed themselves from their common world, gone somewhere else and come back and said, I am not the person I thought I was. I need to be this. I need to do this. I need to improve this. I need to appreciate this. So they almost always say, I am transformed. We all need that. And I've been going back and forth internationally for 30 years now through one job or another. And every trip does transform me in a different way. So I think that's our calling as human beings on this planet, that we are constantly in a state of improvement. And this experience does improve people. It's challenging, it's difficult, it's uncomfortable. But they come back going, I had no idea I could do that. And look, I wonder what I can do next. So it's transformational.
You got to give me more about you. You say every time you come back, you're different. Let's go to your first time. What happened for you?
I have the experience that I think everyone had. I went to West Africa for 2 years on a mission project. I was a Southern Baptist and was part of a water development project. And I knew then, though I had a full-fledged business degree from UNC Chapel Hill, that I would probably never use that in the business sector. I came back and said, I think I want to work with organizations that are changing the world with disadvantaged people. And it changed my career direction completely. I ended up getting a seminary degree and studying theology and developing countries, and then decided to go into community-based work like this. I see people's lives transformed both within the faith context and outside the faith context because they're serving others. And that's what I've given my life to since then, is to see people transformed as they go and work with other people who are in need but have just as much to offer in return when that dynamic happens. And so that's what my personal life mission is to make sure that these improvements happen. It usually, because I love building and I'm kind of a tinkerer myself, it happens around the construction site.
Your first experience specifically with Building Goodness was 1999?
It was 2003.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you went to Haiti?
Well, the first few years I taught Haitian Creole. I speak Creole because of a previous job that I had, and what Jack Stoner and those volunteers needed was a tutor. And so I taught them, some of them who were willing, conversational Creole. At that point, I had small kids. My wife and I agreed that I didn't need to be run off to Haiti every other week, which I'd love to do, but I didn't. So for the first few years, I just volunteered to teach and work locally. And then after that, I got much more involved internationally.
Mary Alice Blackwell, you did finally write a newspaper story about your experience in Haiti. It was almost 2 years after your first experience in Haiti that it was published in your former newspaper, the Charlottesville Daily Progress?
Right, okay. Right.
Here, I have it in front of me.
Okay.
I just want to read the first few lines.
Okay.
And then ask you about it. Quote, after writing newspaper articles for 30 years, I found myself at a loss for words. It has taken nearly 2 years to find some semblance of those words. Nothing in my life has touched me more than 6 days in Haiti. I was afraid to fly. I didn't know anyone on the trip. I had no carpentry skills. It was the hardest thing I ever did. It was the most rewarding thing I have ever done. There's much more to this article. It's beautifully written, but I want to hear more about this in your own words.
Just hearing you read it brings back emotions to me because it is still hard for me to remember back then. And this is actually a combination of my first two trips. After my second trip, I wrote this story.
Tell us about what's hard.
To just be a person who can go home and flick on a television and sit and watch mindless TV to, you know, talking about, oh, I don't have this or I don't have that. I wish I had a better car. I wish I had a bigger house. And then you go to a place where you see abject poverty. You see people, children, who don't have a piece of paper to write on. And you don't see, you know, men and women with proper clothing. I saw an old gentleman wearing a T-shirt, and it said, "World's Best Grandma." And it was pink. And he didn't care because he had a T-shirt and he was happy and he was showing it to us. And you go there and the people, there was this one little tiny frail woman who said she saw myself and two other women that went on my first trip. And she says, "Oh, you need to come and stay in my bed." She was going to give up her bed for the three of us. And we said, you know, they didn't have anything, but they wanted to share it with us. And then you go back home, and then you're sitting back in front of the TV set, and you're going, you know, I just wish I could have the happiness that those people have. They appreciated everything they had. The little children would come and smile and take your hand and want to walk with you. And when you're up in the mountains, there's no running water, so we would have to walk a mile down to a creek to take a bath. And the little kids, a little narrow path, and the little kids would take your hand and lead you down. They had no shoes on. We had our big hiking boots on, and we're stumbling and falling, and they're laughing because we can't walk these little paths. And then you see them at night going off, scurrying back home in the dark, and we're going, these are just remarkable, resilient people, and they touched me, and they made me feel like this is where I belong. This is where I want to belong. This is where I want to go back to. And as many times as he will let me go, I will go. But
as long as you have to come back and write about it, that's the requirement.
I would love to.
Tell us more about how you, Mary Alice Blackwell, are different because you've had these experiences with building goodness projects in Haiti.
I think I want to be a better person. I want to help people more. I walk down the streets of Charlottesville and I'll see a homeless person and I don't look away. I'll make eye contact with them. I may not always have a dollar on me to give them, but I acknowledge their humanity. And I think that's what it's all about. We just need to acknowledge each other. And I think that's what part of building Goodness Foundation is. It's, you know, we are a community of people. We help each other. Mm. And I don't know. It's still hard for me to find the words. It really is.
But it sounds like you have no doubt in your mind then that you are a different person.
Oh, yes.
Than you would have been if you hadn't.
Right. And I so desperately would love my friends and family to go and do this. But, you know, it's hard. You know, do you go to a third world country and it's scary for people. But it's so, I wish they could have.
It does not sound like it was hard once you got there.
Oh, I mean, it wasn't. Once you get there and you're on the ground and you become mm-hmm. a part of that culture, you feel like you fit.
Yeah. And I would say that there's a lot of work that goes into making that happen. We've had 50 trips that went to Haiti last year. That's a week. That's one per week. We have a very well organized logistical system. When you get on the ground, you hop in transportation. You have a safe place to stay that night. We have great food. Rarely does anyone get sick. Now and then there's a stomach problem. We have ways of being in sight, in communities, interacting, and still taking care of our volunteers. So we haven't had, you know, knocking on your vinyl wood here, that there's been no one hurt on our trip significantly. We've had a few people, staff people, get sick who lived in country, and that was because they were there for a long time. But it's a very safe experience and eye-opening. So I, as much as we talk about the challenge of it, I want to also convey, you know, we got this down. We've been doing it for a while. We have
really
all the policies and the evacuation plans. And if anything did happen, we could get people out. We've just got it all organized.
So to you who are listening, when you feel the urge coming on to help make the world a better place, what do you do about it? Have you ever been involved in a volunteer effort that strikes you as somehow similar to what Building Goodness is doing? Or something completely different, but that you experienced a similar sense of accomplishment? Our call and phone number, 888-WMRA-TALK, translates in all numbers to 888-967-2825. Or if you want to post to us on Facebook we are listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. So often, Kelly, when we on this show talk to people who have been in some place like Haiti, they talk about what we were hearing from Mary Alice, about the happiness that seems so prevalent and so different from when they get back home in the States. What do you attribute that to?
Oh my goodness. That is the question.
Well, it's good because you're going to get a minute to think about it. We have to pause for the break.
Good. I'll come back to that.
We're going to continue here on Virginia Insight with Kelly Epley, now Executive Director of the Building Goodness Foundation, as well as volunteer with Building Goodness, Mary Alice Blackwell. And if you want to participate, you'll be welcome to call in when we get back in just about 1 minute. These days, she does administrative duties for a center researching cystic fibrosis. But for some 30 years prior, she was a newspaper reporter and editor. Mary Alice Blackwell is one of our guests. Sitting next to her, a former Baptist church pastor who, after leaving that profession, worked with a number of different nonprofits. Today, Kelly Epley serves as executive director of the Building Goodness Foundation. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. So, on the spot again, Kelly Epley, this phenomenon we hear so often about, people going to some incredibly impoverished place in the world mm-hmm. and feeling surrounded with joy and happiness that seems prevalent among the people there, come back to the U.S. and they wonder why it seems so non-prevalent here. Mm.
There are two responses that are most common from volunteers who come back from Haiti or any place we work, Nicaragua, Guatemala. Number one is they gave me more than I gave them. I mean, that's almost, I think I got more than I gave. And another one would be, how are they so happy and they have so little? And I think I'll answer that question two ways and quickly. One is a statement about us. We really attach our happiness to our things. And we've done that over time. And I'm not saying we should do away with all our things. I just think it's really important to see that, that true happiness doesn't necessarily come from the amount of things and toys we have. There are basic needs, and then there are our needs and wants. The second way I'd answer that question, looking from a Haitian's perspective, what little perspective I can gain, they have a philosophy called dégager. And it's a philosophy of life. You make do with what you have. You find out what's important, and you make that work first. But dégager means making work, making do with what you have. And people have learned to be happy with very little. They focus on what's important. They keep their kids safe, their family and friends specifically take care of them. If someone goes hungry, everyone goes hungry because usually you share. There's a real sense of family identity that comes with that world that I think they attach their happiness to relationships instead of to things. And that would be my quick answer to my convoluted answer to your question. But
I'm looking for more.
Well, we come back saying, do I really need this extra thing? Do I really have to have this extra stuff? And why am I working so hard for this other stuff? I'm no longer happy doing that. And so people learn to locate their happiness in other places than they did previously.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I think I'm struck by an image that I was there, because when we go up into the mountains, we carry our food. We take water with us. We take rice that the Haitians would cook for us in the evening. And one evening, there was this gentleman. He had his machete. Machete is the tool that they use for everything up there. And we had rice in some kind of nylon bag, and he was unweaving the nylon bag. He'd taken all these strands, he'd taken the bag apart, and he was making a rope out of it. So they made use of everything, and that's I remember that by what you were saying.
Kelly Epley, I heard you say a few moments ago that true happiness does not come from the toys we have.
And of course, my wife is laughing because I like my toys too. But you know,
but that tells me one of the things that happiness does not come from. I'm hoping you can tell me more about what you've concluded or what you're developing, at least some understanding about what happiness does seem to come from, at least when you're in places like Haiti and Guatemala and El Salvador working with incredibly impoverished people.
Haitians are a deeply spiritual people. That in many ways, and people say, oh, that's where voodoo comes from. But you know, the Haitians that I know that have met and are deeply spiritual people. I think they feel a sense of connectedness to a higher being that we don't quite feel, and I think that plants them in the earth in a different way. And they don't have as many things to rely on, so they naturally rely on a greater understanding of the world, I think. Almost every place you go, there's a church. I think some people want to be missionaries in Haiti. They should be sending missionaries to us. I mean, there's almost a church on every corner. But the choir practices almost every church there at 6 o'clock in the morning. And it's a spirituality for them to get together and sing before they start their day doing no matter what they're doing. I mean, they're a deeply spiritual and communal people. And so we learn a lot from them in that regard. They reference themselves within family and within a higher purpose and higher calling. At the same time, they're not as attached to things as much. That doesn't mean that Haitians are not very clever and not very good at taking care of things. They are. They can make a dollar or a good stretch very far. But they just seem to have a better perspective on what is family and important and what is their relationship with God as they understand God.
Mary Alice, he's a former Baptist minister.
Right.
And so I'm sure there's at least one person listening who's saying to themselves, well, you know, he used to lead a congregation in some church somewhere,
yeah,
and you would expect him to go to the God thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious. I know nothing about your religious
right.
or spiritual background, Mary Alice Blackwell, but as somebody who's worked in the world as a journalist for some 30 years.
Very cynical, yes.
See, that would have been my guess.
Yes.
We got that in common.
All right.
You got theories? What, this happiness that you miss when you get back to the U.S.?
You know, it is almost, it's a different type of spirituality. We all find our, you know, what drives us, what we need.
Sense of purpose?
Right. There are three sounds in Haiti that I remember. One is the sound of horns from cars going all over the place. And two are the night sounds. When you're up in the mountains, you go to bed when the sun goes down. And the two things you hear all night long are roosters crowing and people singing. You can hear churches are way up in those mountains, and you can hear the choir practice. Even late into the night, you hear that. And when you're laying out there, sometimes in a tent, sometimes just in the open air, and you're looking up and you can see a sky like you've never seen it before because there's no light pollution. The stars are brilliant. And then you hear the spiritual voices. I don't know what they're singing because I don't speak Creole, but I wasn't even sure if it was church music, but I'm assuming it is. And then the nature around you with the roosters, and it's wild roosters or whatever they are, and it's just mesmerizing. And it, to me, whether you believe in God or not, that's where I felt closest to some type of spiritual being.
Are you happier in your life when you're back in the U.S. than you were before you started these building goodness projects?
It's tough because I lost my job. You know, in journalism, there were many layoffs because newspapers are going.
Yeah, journalists, not a good thing to be.
So I lost my identity. And if it hadn't been for that first trip there, I think I would have been really, woe is me. But because I saw people who were doing with much less than I ever have imagined, I felt okay. So I think they helped save me in a way from going down a dark place.
But from what I've heard you say, both during this hour, Mary mm-hmm. Alice Blackwell, as well as when we've talked before, it seems to me as if you feel living in the U.S. that much of our population, that many of us live in a dark place, a much darker place than we need to, considering all the material wealth that we have. And you go to a place like Haiti and you experience joy like you've never experienced it before.
Mm-hmm.
Am I getting that right?
I don't know. I think we are as a country, I think we're a good country. I think people are happy. But I think to go there, you can see true happiness without all the bells and whistles. You know, you don't need the shiny toys. You just need a rock that you can roll and play with. You can find joy in the simple things. And if you can find joy in the simple things, imagine what you can do when you come home and you have all these big things. You know, you should share.
Well, that's what I wonder.
Yeah.
I wonder if based on what we were hearing a few minutes ago from Kelly Epley and the toys thing,
mm-hmm.
if the toys get in the way. If we have too many big
right.
things.
Perhaps.
I mean, I we conduct these interviews at least in part for anybody listening.
Yeah.
But I got to tell you, I'm fascinated personally by what both of you are saying what few toys I have. I mean, I work for a nonprofit, so I don't have a lot of money to spend on toys.
Right.
But if getting rid of my toys means I'm going to be more happy in my life, I'd seriously consider it. But I'm not convinced that that's what you're telling me
right.
is causing the difference.
Right. I think the toys that cause distractions and
share them. You don't have to get rid of them. Just share them with someone.
Right. And simplify them. You know, simplify them and share them, not do away with them. We need our distractions, of course. We do, because we're often very plugged into something we're doing. But sharing them, something to help you get outside of yourself to serve someone else, that's a good thing. You know, just reaching out, that act of service. And you know, the toys, I think everyone wants toys. Every Haitian I know likes to have toys. Mm-hmm. But they're just not as many to get in the way. So I would just call them something that can be a distraction unless they're reflected upon.
There are at least two people listening right now.
No one's calling in.
One of them, we have these shows that we don't get any phone calls until after the show, and people tell us they were absolutely so fascinated by the guests, they did not want to interrupt. Oh. But of the two people listening right now, what my psychic spidey sense is telling me, one of them is somebody who'd love to go to someplace like Haiti or Nicaragua or El Salvador and work on one of these building goodness projects. And somebody else is saying, I'm not sure, maybe I'm like Mary Allison. I don't want to get on a plane, or I'm not. That may be too big a step for me to start with, but I would like to do something that feels like I'm being of service to others without going to Haiti first. Talk to those two people. What can they do?
Oh, there are thousands of ways to give, and we are blessed.
Well, we're here talking about building goodness. So tell us what they can do for building goodness.
Well, of course, you can always write a check, because supporting a lot of volunteers who go, and I would be remiss to not mention that, lots of people who want to go cannot pay for themselves to go. And it takes a little bit of money to run a core office to organize all these volunteers. So a check to Building Goodness Foundation is always deeply appreciated. The next thing is to give go on our website and see if there's something on our project list that really inspires you, whether it's local or international, and just to see what something you can plug into. But buildinggoodness.org is our website. So
give me some samples. I mean, there are things that a non-carpentry have trouble holding a hammer and a nail at the same time type guy like me, who probably isn't going to go to Haiti anytime soon, can still do with building goodness.
Mm-hmm. On several levels, as an organization, we always need good communications people, Tom, to tell the story to you personally. We always love, and that's why Mary Alice got it so engaged. We thought she can tell our story better than anybody, and she does.
But she had the same hammer and nail problem, and yet today you're pretty good with a hammer and nail.
I can hammer, I think, maybe one nail better than I did before. But
one of the things, Kelly Epley, that you tell people is that if there is room for you in one of our projects, we have so many designated spaces for non-construction-trained people, and we can still use your help on these construction and renovation projects.
Thanks for making me get more concrete. All our sites are very different, but there is a commonality. When you're doing construction, there's always things that need to be carried, toted, always things that need to be moved around, always cleanup that needs to happen. Hammer and nails is only a small part of what we do. A lot of times we work in concrete now, so we have to be working together in teams
and
lifting
and
toting.
Yeah.
Digging, toting, as long as you're physically able to work some, and we're always conscious of taking in water and being healthy and taking breaks, but if you're willing to jump in and get your hands dirty, there's a place for you. Carrying, toting, hammering, nailing, pouring, everything that happens on a construction site, holding
and you
things,
mentioned you do that
things.
Kind of stuff 40 weekends a year in Albemarle County, in
That's
the greater
right.
Charlottesville region.
Mm-hmm.
And then for that person who is willing to get on the plane and go to someplace like Haiti, what do they need to know? For one thing, they have to pay for the plane ticket themselves.
That's right. We ask volunteers to help raise their own funds. And basically, it's a no cost. It's an even deal. We make no money off of that. They raise the money it takes to cover the average cost to fly there. And
is
the
that average cost round trip somewhere upwards of $1,000?
It's about $1,100 to be in the incentive kite program, and it's $1,300 to be in another place where you stay in a guest house. So it's $1,300 that covers everything.
And there are some places in Haiti where you can stay in a place with electricity. You don't have to go up in the mountains.
And that's looking at our projects, you'll see that we build places and build in places that have nice guest houses and stay in very nice places with fine meals, and there are restaurants. And so you get there and people come back, I had no idea I was going to be so entertained and it's going to be so beautiful. So, Haiti's got a lot of variety to offer.
So, Mary Alice Blackwell, we're going to run out of time, about a minute. Mm-hmm. You said earlier that you'd love to persuade friends, family members to do this because you think it would be so good for them to experience what you did. We got 30 seconds for you to persuade somebody who's listening.
Oh, that's if I could do that in 30 seconds, I'd do it, because I've been spending the past 3 years trying to get them to do it. But and it's a selfish thing, because I think if they go, then they would understand how I feel, and I would have somebody to talk to. It's an enriching experience to be around these people and to be around people, not only the Haitians, but the people from Building Goodness who open up their hearts and go down there. There was one gentleman who said he built homes for doctors and lawyers, and he went on my second trip with me, Dave White, and ended up going back, quitting his job.
Building wealthy people's houses.
He spent the past 2 years in Haiti working with the Salvation Army. It's that kind of transformation that Building Goodness has given all of us.
Our guests have been the executive director of the Building Goodness Foundation, Kelly Epley, plus Building Goodness volunteer Mary Alice Blackwell. And earlier in the program, the professional construction consultant who these days often serves as a volunteer project manager for Building Goodness efforts in Haiti, Joe Simpson. Thank you all so much for making time for us.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you.
Virginia Insight's executive producer, Matt Binke. Associate producers, Terry Ward and Bob Levicky. Some of our break music supplied by Robert Jospe and Inner Rhythm. You can find audio postings of Virginia Insight by going to WMRA.org, then clicking on programs, and then clicking on Virginia Insight. And when you go to that page, you will see links to more information about our guests and the work they are doing. Thanks so much for tuning in for this edition. I'm Tom Graham. Hope we can get together again soon for more insight.